Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Good Morning Pride. I almost messed it up. You know what? I think I got nervous because our special guest today. I always tease him for messing up intros, and I think the rooster's coming to roost here today, or something like that. Right? Is it the chickens that come to roost? I forget how it phrases. Welcome, Jeremy Reisman, to Good Morning Pride. How are you today, buddy?
Good, man. That was a great simile and or metaphor that you just started off with.
I think it's an analogy. Well, I'm not sure. I need an English teacher who can help me with my correct. What is it? I mean, I'm lost at this point with what exactly it is and how and what I've metaphors, similes. I've got them all confused. It's mid-May, and we're past the draft. I was thinking that I was going to get a chance to have my brain shut down for a little bit because of the draft is behind us, and then the Lions go out and sign Jared Goff to a massive extension. So, got to get my brain working again, and I figure you're the most knowledgeable person to get my brain back on track. So, here we are.
Oops. Well,
Oops.
clearly your brain isn't back on track if that's what you thought
Yeah.
I would
Well,
bring to the show.
it's apparently my decision making is still questionable. So, all right. So I think at this point everyone knows Jared Goff got an extension, right? The deal is still not fully released. I mean, we know basics, right? But what we do know is the new deal is to piggyback on top of his existing deal, which ends at the end of the 2024 season. So then he at the end of the 2024 season, he's going to have a new deal, or contractual terms. It's a new deal. It's the extension, right? That goes 24. I'm sorry, 2025, 2026, 2027, with an option in 2028. What I find interesting is I haven't seen any clarity on whose option it is. Right?
Right.
I've watched Tom Pelissero talk on NFL Network. I've looked at his Twitter feed. I've Googled it, and I cannot figure out whose option it is, if it's a team option or if it's a player option. Another interesting wrinkle to unravel when we start looking at, what this pot or what this new contract is all about. So right off the bat, we're gonna get the details on that, and so I think once we get the details, we'll have a much firmer, base to make our impressions of. Is this a good deal? Is this not a good deal? Where are, is it really good up front? Is it bad on the back end? Well, we need those details to do a full evaluation. But in the interim, everybody wants reactions. So let's give them reactions. Initial reaction for you is what, Jeremy?
I would say a very mild surprise that it was that high. $53 million average per year puts him second, only behind Joe Burrow, who has $55 million a year. But that, I mean, the average per year thing is generally a worthless metric. It's not that important when it comes to cap management and things like that. It's an easy way to rank quarterbacks. What's usually more important is the guaranteed money. And so $170 million guaranteed in his contract. Again, kind of a high figure, a very high percentage of his overall average value. And at first, again, that was a little bit surprising. But then, like, you look at the trends of quarterbacks really since Deshaun Watson got his fully guaranteed contract, every other contract has kind of been inching its way closer to fully guaranteed. Now, no one has reached fully guaranteed because no one is as stupid as the Cleveland Browns. But in general, it seems like a big deal. But not like ridiculously big, not beyond, like, if I were to have made a range of possibilities where I think this deal might land, I probably would have said somewhere between 48 and 55 million. And so this is within that range. So it's not a complete shock or anything, but it's on the higher end. I think it's certainly manageable. This is where contracts are headed. They always increase. So while he didn't quite set the market, it's not surprising that he came close to setting the market because he's been playing as a top 10 quarterback for the past 2.5 years. and arguably closer to a top five quarterback over the past year and a half. So I get it.
Mm-hmm. I do think if we were to like to kind of deconstruct what we expect out of this, I do expect that fourth year option to be hefty, right? Yeah. And I do think that fourth year option is going to carry the bulk of the contract. That's how the Lions have done it with the other guys, right? And it just makes sense. Like if you're going to put an option on it, that tends to be if he earns it, then you give it to him type of thing. Or it usually sets the table for another extension at that time, right? So my guess is it's a team option.
In general, these are right. There's not a lot right. of almost player always, options. Yeah.
Sometimes, like Kirk Cousins has some like weird stuff always put into his contracts because he's weird. but well, you know what I mean. Like he's
weird. It's okay to say he's weird. He's weird.
He's quirky. He's quirky. I think is a better approach.
Two Wolverines are calling a former Spartan quarterback quirky and weird. That's fine.
Don't do that to me. Don't put me in. Yes, it averages 53, but I think like when we like take that option year out of the way, I think it's going to be a lot more, or it's, you know, it's going to be a lot closer, I think, to the range that you were just talking about, right? It may not be up to 53. It's probably not going to be below 48, but if you look at the 3 years that he's going to be under contract, it's probably going to be, all right, like around 50 million. It might be even maybe 49 or it, you know what I mean? Because I really think that fourth year is going to be, it's going to be a heavier portion of the pie. Most of that guaranteed money, though, I think is going to be eaten up in the first 3 years as well, right? So if you're looking at those, you have to, we don't know is that if that 170 includes the 10 million that he's guaranteed this year. And if it is, that 170 can get split over 4 years plus the option. So potentially over 5 years, which means again, if you're spreading that guaranteed money out, it's a lot easier. It's a lot more palatable. Keeping in mind though, that the fifth year option may have a high price tag. The Lions are probably going to want a lower amount of guarantees in that fifth year. Right. And so that tends to, you know, maybe push more of the guarantees up into the first 4 years. So again, like if he's making $40 million guaranteed over the first like 4 years and then $10 million guaranteed in that option year, that's the going rate for a quarterback these days. Right.
But you have to get to 170 yes. million. That's a tricky part.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If they guarantee more, if they up the guarantees in this year, so it's beyond that 10, and then you do the 25, 26, 27, each like 40, 40, 40, that gets you to 160, and then you put 10 million in that last year for 170, you know, you can afford that. The option's less, it's less severe. But again, I don't know how they're going to do it. I'm just spitballing ideas here. So I do think this number will be lower than I think what people are projecting it to be right now. But again, either way, it's not overly, and I mean, I'm just putting up speculative numbers right. here, and that's probably a pointless, it's probably a pointless exercise because we'll know the number soon enough. But I guess the point here is, while it's $53 million on average, that doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to end up being the second highest paid when we look at how this thing is structured, right? Like he may end up being, he may end up being like in the top five, but like you just said, with the way he's been playing recently, that falls in line, right, with the top five production.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of people equate, I think, the average per year to salary cap, which is a very mm-hmm. bad way to think about NFL contracts. A lot of times when you're looking at an average per year, and say it's 53 million, a lot of times mm-hmm. they don't hit that number in terms of your cap hit three or four years into the contract. Yeah. Mm-hmm. yeah. And so, I saw some people clowning, like, oh, the Lions are spending this percentage of their cap on Goff and Sewell and Amon-Ra. It's just like, yeah, but like the other two guys have single digit cap hits in 2024. And it's very possible that Goff is somewhere like around 20 million, right? Like there's a good chance of it being relatively low both this year, maybe even next year and the year after. And then you're talking about like a big jump to like 50, 55, maybe even 60 cap hit. And again, some of that cap hit might be in a quote unquote dummy option fourth year that the Lions probably don't have an intention of exercising, or maybe they have it holding there for a possible extension. So it's the reason why I understand why people use average per year, because again, it's an easy way to stack quarterbacks or stack positions and contracts and stuff. But generally speaking, it does not have as much of a practical use when analyzing contracts. And so it's why it's hard to do one of these instant reaction podcasts when we don't know the full structure of the deal, even with the guarantees in place.
I'm with you. I'm with you. I do think it's easier for people to wrap their head around an average, right? As opposed to just like knowing when the cap hits hit, because that's something we don't even know with Goff. Like we can look at like Amon-Ra's contract, and we can look at like Sewell's contract, and we can say, okay, those seem to be juxtaposed in when they hit, right? Like Amon-Ra's hitting the maximum number, or the not the maximum, but the highest number in 2026, where Sewell doesn't hit his maximum number until 2028. So like if Goff comes in and his maximum number is in 2027, like that's purposeful, right? Like, and they do that on purpose. Like the second highest paid player so Goff is the first highest paid player, right? And then the second highest paid player we've talked about before is Taylor Decker, because he's in the final year of a contract, which had a big extension. And then the third highest paid player is Frank Ragnow. Well, Frank, he's already seen the peak of his contract. That came, last year. Last year, it was the highest point that his contract was going to be at. And now he's actually tapering back off, back down, and then it'll kick back up in 2026. But it's still going to be below what he was making in 2023. And when you like look at like, so he's making 16.4 last year. That's what he made last year, 16.4. He's going to dip down to 12, then a little bit back up to 14, and then he's going to be at 16.3 in the final year of his contract. But when you look at like percentage of salary cap and what it's estimated to be, the 16.4 last year was 7.3% of the salary cap. That 16.3 2 years from now is only expected to be 5.8 of the salary cap, right? So you see this drop where, so when people are saying, man, you're pushing so much money into the future, It's okay to backload these contracts and push them into the future, because $50 million today is not the same as $50 million tomorrow. It's going to be a lower percentage of the cap hit, and that's one of the reasons that you can get it to adjust, and then it becomes more palatable, I guess is what I'm saying. And then if you stack when it peaks and you match it up with your other superstars, it's really easy to have a different superstar peak at a different year of their contract. And then that's how you can afford them, as opposed to just doing an even split and then spreading that out equally amongst the 3 years. That would be more problematic than the approach that NFL teams have.
Yeah, that all makes sense.
Go ahead.
I was going to potentially move the conversation to something else, because I feel
Me too. I just wanted to give you the opportunity to talk because I was rambling there.
No, it's all good. I'll let you. It's your podcast. You take it where we go next.
No, my question was, my thought was, for a player to reach what they thought was his peak in LA, and to get a big contract in LA, and then to be discarded. When's the last time you've seen a player, like, cause we see that happen all the time. When's the last time you've seen a player re-hit that peak again? It doesn't happen. right? It rarely happens, right?
I've thought about this for a long time, and I don't even know how to search into history to try to find an example. But if someone has an example, it'd be the first time I've ever heard of it. And I was just talking about this with Mike Payton. Like, this speaks so highly to Jared Goff's character that he was able to weather that storm. Because remember, it wasn't just a matter of weathering the storm in Los Angeles and the embarrassment of a trade where you're clearly the quote-unquote throw-in, or you're labeled the bridge quarterback, or all these right. things. But you also go to a Detroit team that is decimated, that has no hope, that is just brought in this weird, quirky head coach and this first-time GM no one's ever heard of, and you're expected to go in there and compete, and it doesn't happen. You go 0-10-1 to start your Detroit Lions career, and those Fox graphics show up every week. Your Jared Goff is whatever with Sean McVay, and Owen whatever with every other coach.
Right.
And then he plays a little bit better to the end of the season, but then 2022 comes around, and what happens again? The Lions start 1-6. This guy has gone through a heck of a lot, and has been called bad names by some people that might be in this podcast that aren't Eric. And he's weathered it all. I'm fully adopting. I'm fully owning some of the bad things I said about Jared Goff, and you're going to see him on PrideOfDetroit.com pretty soon. But like that's it. Like, it on just a pure skill level, it's so unbelievably hard to go what he's gone through and come out on the other end and succeed in a new town and reinvent yourself and get better and be humble enough to realize that there's things that you need to improve on and do it and go through it and weather the storm and weather the media storm and weather the losing storm. But you know, Goff has always shown that he's capable of it, right? Like, he did it at Cal. Cal was a horrible team before he got there.
Certainly was.
And he turned around that program. And so I think this is a day to celebrate Jared Goff, not only as a franchise quarterback. Let's call it I think for the first 3 years we all shied away from that term for him because we weren't sure. Jared Goff is a franchise quarterback, and he's a damn good one, and he's a really impressive human being for being able to persevere everything he's been through.
The only other player I can think that I think listeners might recognize that has gone through something similar would be like Baker Mayfield. But I mean, but Baker isn't going to get this level of money. He's just not, right? Like, he would need to do what we've seen from Goff, right? Which is show that consistency over time and be able to take the team to another level. I think last year they kind of backed their way into the playoffs and hit a really struggling Philly team and then put up a really good fight against Detroit. But I think there needs to be more longevity with Baker before he's going to see a big re-up in contract, right? Now I know he just got paid recently, right? But it's still on the lower tier, right? He's got it 3 years. I think it was $100 million for 3 years. So that's, you know what I mean? That's really good for what he was doing. But the difference between $100 million, a 3 year, $100 million and 4 year, $200 million is, you know, pretty significant. Yep. So I think that speaks to all the things that you were pointing out with Goff is we all said, you know, we're not ready yet. We're not ready yet. You know, he's got to show it. And he struggled those first couple of years, certainly. And I think the cast around him didn't help. The team wasn't ready. I don't think he was ready mentally. You know, he got cast off, and that took a toll. He's mentioned and admitted to that. But the confidence is there. The accuracy is there. I just think back to the LA game, and I just think about how he was just absolutely in the face of adversity, facing off against the bully who, you know, pushed him around, and he was dealing. in that whole game pretty much.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, he was like 11 of 11, right? Like the first 11 passes he completed or something ridiculous like that. Like, and it was like tight window, like craziness. And like, the thing that always impressed me about Goff was the year, the playoffs before he was traded to Detroit when he had the broken hand. And then the injuries happened and he played with the broken hand. And I always thought that was awfully impressive and spoke to his character. And I think we've seen that kind of that one moment repeat itself where you've seen him look at what's in front of him and step up. And a lot of people would fold in those situations, and he really didn't. And I think that's a testament to how this team is built and in the, with his leadership, the way that it is, he is very much the face of what they want it to be. And this is, he's shown again, when he's faced with a problem, he's found a way. Now, is he perfect? No, he's not. But he is one of the best quarterbacks in the league right now, and he's getting paid like it.
One thing that I think is going to be interesting to see, and we've seen it already a little bit, is you know, a lot of people talk about, when they talk about elite quarterbacks, franchise quarterbacks, they elevate the players around them. And I think for a long time, Jared Goff was kind of viewed as the opposite, right? Everything, you know, the common term, sure, you know, everything around him had to be perfect for him to succeed, which I think is very much an exaggeration of the truth. I think every quarterback needs a certain amount of comfort around them to succeed. And I don't think Jared Goff is uniquely leaning on that, even though I probably at one point was one of the people who said that. But like, DJ Chark, how did he do after he left Detroit? Josh Reynolds, how's he going to do?
Yeah, that's going to be
How did
fun.
He do before he landed in Detroit? He was much better with Goff than he was. Well, I don't even remember what team he came from. Texans?
Tennessee. Yeah.
Basically the Texans, same team. And so like, I think he's already starting to put to bed some of these notions that he doesn't make the players around him better. And I don't know, does Sam Laporta have the kind of year he does without Jared Goff? Does Amon-Ra St. Brown? I mean, he's still probably pretty good because he's just
not
a crazy
that I've heard.
Being.
When he got his contract extension, I heard if he didn't go to Detroit, he never would have been that, because Detroit doesn't have anybody else but him. So that's what I was told. I was told.
But no, I think it's now fair to say that Jared Goff has made some of the pieces around him better. And that is, again, that is the cornerstone of a franchise quarterback. And so, to me, the evidence is more than overwhelming now that Jared Goff deserves a deal like this, even if it is on the high end of whatever I was thinking.
The thing for me, and the thing that I guess the characteristic that stands out with Goff, and if you want to argue, if someone wants to push back and say that he doesn't make people better, my counter argument would be that he understands what players' strengths are and how to utilize them, right? He's never going to, and this is a whole team thing too. Like the coaching staff does this too. Like Jared knows, if I can get Sam in this situation, I'm going to be able to hit him because he's better right here. If I can get Amon-Ra, or if I can, you know what I mean? Like, he knows every play intimately, because him and Ben Johnson have helped design this playbook. But he knows the plays, he knows the players, he knows their strengths, he knows their weaknesses, and he rarely puts players in situations where they aren't featured and where they aren't at their best. And so, I mean, how many times do you see him throw like a pass across the middle that isn't like one that a player can catch in stride and just keep going? Like, you never see him throw like those like murder balls where like somebody's going to, you know, catch a knee and then be out for the season. And then you got to yell at the other team's safety about it or something. Right. Like you never see him. Like he's very smart about how he approaches it. And that's, I guess, one of his best, that might be his best characteristic in my mind, is he takes care. He knows how to make the players around him better. Now, is he developing their game? I don't know. But is he putting them in situations to succeed? Absolutely. Like, he knows what the play is designed. He knows where it's supposed to go, but he knows which players are going to do which well in which spot. And he knows where, how to target them in those spots too. Like, and that's why you have a guy like Sam Laporta setting rookie records. That's why you end up having Amon-Ra having the seasons that he's had, is because he understands the players around him and how to feature them.
And I think that part of his game goes underappreciated nationally and even locally a little bit, because I think a lot of people look at that sort of stuff and be like, oh, that's Ben Johnson. That's Ben Johnson's scheme. Yeah. He's scheming guys open. He's doing this. He's doing that. But it's easy to forget that Ben Johnson took a lot of his ideas from Jared Goff.
Yeah.
Like, you remember the Las Vegas summit that they had for 3 days to develop their new offense? Like, Jared Goff has been an integral part of developing and designing this offense. This offense is almost as much his as it is Ben Johnson's. And that should give you confidence that when eventually Ben Johnson finds the right head coaching job that he wants, Jared Goff should still be okay, because that is where he's taken the biggest step, I think, in his career post-Rams, is he's taking ownership. He's learning stuff. He, you know, the coaching staff has said several times he's become such a better quarterback before the ball is even snapped than he was when he got to Detroit, because he doesn't have Sean McVay, I would say, holding his hand, but it's not even holding his hand. He's holding the whole controller for him. He's saying, move over, Jared Goff. Let me grab the sticks. That's how it was in LA. And now he has so much more ownership over everything, and it's making him a better, smarter quarterback, where he does understand routes. He does understand coverages. He does understand pre-snap reads. He does understand what his own players does best and how to utilize that to his best ability. And that, I mean, that's quarterbacking. That most times that stuff is way more important than, can you throw 70 yards downfield? How are you now on out routes? Can you escape the pocket and run for 40 yards? Like, no, if you have a key understanding, a core understanding of offensive scheme, defensive scheme, and how it all works together, then you're a really good quarterback. And that doesn't show up when you're throwing the ball. It doesn't show up in your highlights, right? It's not something that people can point to and be like, wow, what a play. Jared Goff is an amazing quarterback. And that's why he's always going to be underrated to some aspect nationally, but that's what's made him such an impressive quarterback in Detroit, and why, again, he's deserving of the contract he got.
I think there's going to be a lot more to unpack on this situation as we get into it. They've had a good offense. Like, yes, Ben Johnson deserves a lot of credit. Yes, Jared Goff deserves a lot of credit. But when it comes time to put the ball in people's hands, he's the one who does it. Jared Goff is the one who's doing it, right? And this has been a top five offense for 2 years in a row because of it. And there's a lot of things that are right about this offense, but that's great. They need to be. And I know, look, I said earlier, he's not perfect. And I know people are always going to want that guy who can do everything, right? He's not mobile. Oh, he can't throw it 70 yards or whatever, right? But how many people are, right? Like,
not many.
Yeah, like, we're talking about like one or two people. And then, like, if you made a top five list of quarterbacks in the NFL, doesn't matter who it is. Okay, if you made a top five list, I guarantee the quarterback that ends up fifth on that list, and maybe even the quarterback that ends up fourth on that list, the fan base that player's fan base has massive complaints about how that quarterback is playing, right?
Right.
Because there aren't quarterbacks in the NFL that are void of flaw. And so you have to look at, you have to look at how he utilizes what he has. And I think Lions fans should be happy about that. And I think the proof is on the table right there. You know what I mean? Like, what we've seen over the last, I don't know how many, 27 games or something like that, right? If you go like the 10, right? It's an awfully impressive resume he's put together over a really solid amount of games. And if you add the playoffs into that a bit, I guess it's 30, right? The last 30 games he's played have been awfully impressive, and he's had some down moments, but that's fine. Like, that's just part of the NFL. Everybody does. Okay. I think I'm comfortable putting a bow on it there, until I know a little bit more about the numbers, which I think are going to be fun to talk about. But if you have
Can I ask
something,
you?
yes,
Yeah,
please.
I have one more question for you, and it might not be that answerable until we get those details, but I think a lot of people have been asking because now that this
Yes.
is done, there everyone wants to move on to the next topic or the next extension in this case. And so,
Sure.
yeah, a lot of people are asking, do you think this negatively impacts the chances of something like a Taylor Decker and or a Lee McNeil extension, either this offseason or next?
I think the Decker one is always going to be a little bit challenging, unless he's willing to go down in price, right? Like, I think the Lions would love to give him like a 2 or 3 year extension at like two thirds of what he makes, right? And if he was willing to do that, knowing that he's upwards of, he's over 30 now, right? Right, isn't he? Hold on, I'm gonna
Yeah,
double
I think
check
he's
that just so I'm not speak.
31, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. So like, if he goes in, yeah, you're right. He's 31. If he goes into free agency, he'll be 32. And getting a 3 year contract is gonna be challenging at 32. Is more than likely gonna get a 1 or a 2 year deal. But I think if the Lions were to give him that security, I think he would like that. I think they'd want to come down in pricing. So if he's willing to come down in pricing, I think you can get that done. Aleem, on the other side, is a lot more difficult because the defensive tackle prices are going up, and he is still young and he is still flourishing. But again, you can make it work if you're creative with the cap, right? I mean, just again, I don't have the numbers in front of me. I'm just kind of spitballing off the top of my head. Amon-Ra's big contract hit is in 26. Sewell's is in 28. If you were to structure Aleem, if you were to say, okay, quarterback is just what it is. If you were to say, okay, Aleem hits in 27, and then Aiden's peaks in 29. Like, you might be okay because that Aiden contract is coming. But you have a little bit more time with Aiden. And then, maybe you can avoid the 5th year hump with Aiden, and you get a contract extension done, and you can push that extension where it hits in, in 2030 or something like that, or 2000. Yeah, right. So like, yeah, so there's ways to work around it, and I don't think they're like up against it because they had 23 million available going into this contract extension, and if it ends up going down, like we do think it will, they're gonna have more, and then you start rolling money over and you start planning ahead. Like, they got a couple really, really smart capologists on that front office. So
By the way, they're doing some crazy stuff too. Like, I don't know if you got like if you've looked at back at the Amon-Ra extension or any of the like there's some like weird twists in there that, I reached out to some CAC expert and they're like, yeah, this is a really rare thing that they're doing that we don't normally see. It's super weird. And they definitely I don't know if I want to call them loopholes, but like there's certain structuring ways that they're doing that are really creative that I hadn't seen before, that are working around some things that in a way that's beneficial to the team.
I'm gonna I've to I've touted this guy's horn before.
Don't do it. Don't tell. We're gonna lose him.
I've
We keep losing
noticed
guys in the front office, Eric. Don't do it.
I've noticed that these new wrinkles, these loopholes, have all started to occur once they brought on Brandon Sosna. Sosna is not often talked about because he's number he's behind Dissner, and Dissner gets a lot of the love, and Dissner is very much involved in these, and he's part of it. But Sosna is like a fresh set of eyes coming from the college level, and he is highly intelligent. And I think he looked at these situations, and maybe it's his suggestions, maybe it's not. Maybe a light just clicked on for Dissner that hadn't over the first 6 years of his career doing these. But it there was this change that seemed to occur, and we're starting to see these wrinkles, and we're starting to see them take advantage of veteran cap moves and stuff like that, right? With the salary caps where you can get veteran benefits. Like Marcus Davenport's contract, like I still don't understand that contract. And how they can pay him what they pay him, and it only costs like half or a third or whatever it is. I still don't get it fully. I've tried looking it up. I've asked questions. I'm not getting good answers. There's a lot of really interesting things that get thrown around here. And it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, because you can organize the salary cap in a lot of different ways. And if it keeps jumping the way that it's jumping, they'll be able to afford all these guys.
Right.
The question just becomes, can you get the contracts done before the next guy, which they've done so far. Right.
In general. Yeah. They did it with Amon Ra, right? They did it really with Penei and Jared Goff. And it's interesting, cause I don't know if you'd watched it, but like, Brad Holmes was basically asked today, before the deal was done, on the Rich Eisen show, like, does that matter to you? Does it matter to you to, you know, either get it done first or let the market decide first and see where the market is and then make your decision?
Yeah.
And I've listened to Brad Holmes a lot over the past 3 years. Mm-hmm. I was certain he was going to punt on that answer. I was certain he's going to be like, I certainly was going to say, you know, we have our own process. It's not really impacted by other people. He didn't really say that. He said, yeah, you kind of think about those things a little bit. Like, that takes a little bit. And I'm like, oh, interesting. I thought you were going to take the high road and be like, we have our own process and it doesn't matter what anyone else does.
He kind of did a little bit, but he very much, he very much gave a more honest answer, because he was like, yeah, they, you know, the players' agents do too. And I thought that was a very easy one for him to punt on as well.
Right.
And the fact that I do find it interesting though, because like, that Goff deal had to be done when he's going on to that show, right?
Right.
Like he knew it. I'm sure he was just sitting there like, yep, I know this is coming down the pipe, and I did it, you know, I got ahead of him again. So yeah, why not just show my cards? Because he is he's feeling very comfortable in his own skin right now. That's I'm okay with it. I'm here for the bravado.
Before we close, I want to go back to Aleem really quick. I know I said I wanted to do the short, and now I'm extending it even further. But I think the philosophical debate with a guy like Aleem McNeil is really interesting to think about. Like, throw away numbers, throw away whether the Lions have the cap space or how much it's going to cost him. But the Lions have already gotten to this point in where they are as a franchise, where they have to decide where good players on their roster stand. Are these good players foundational pieces that we have to re-sign? Or are these guys really good players that we're going to have to make a tough decision on, right? Like, Jonah Jackson was the first guy who was that decision. You can even make the argument that maybe TJ Hockenson was the first guy that they had to make that decision on.
Sure.
You know, are we going to give this guy an extension, or are we going to trade him at his highest value? And listen, like, guys like Jared Goff, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Penei Sewell, Aiden Hutchinson, those are the easy decisions.
Pillars. Yes. Those four are the pillars.
Right. Aleem McNeil is, to me, like, right in the middle right now. He could really go either way. And I think the Lions are probably going to do the wise thing to do, which is, let's be sure about it. Let's give him 2024. He's got, you know, DJ Reader to help free him up a little bit. We brought in Marcus Davenport. We're better on the defensive seven, the front seven now. Show me you're worth it, and then maybe you inch towards that foundational piece. I'm just not sure he's there yet. He had a hell of a season, I'm not going to lie. And, you know, if you're into PFF scores, he's a top 10 defensive tackle. I'm not sure I quite put him in that category yet, but he's close.
Yep.
And so,
again,
to me,
it's
a make or break season.
I just watched that Rams game.
Yeah, he tore it up. He tore it up that game.
He was insane.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just consistency has always been the issue with him, right? Like last year, the year before that was that Giants game, right? Where he 12 pressures or something insane like that in the Giants game. And then it needs to be a little more consistent.
The Giants didn't double him. That's why.
Right.
And I think the addition of Reader will really give us a taste.
Yeah.
Of now that you have to double Reader, can you let Aleem cook? And will he? It's interesting. It's kind of a chicken or egg thing, because you look at the lack of attention and the lack of investment on the defensive line. Like, yes, they've invested draft picks, but they haven't invested a whole lot of money outside of Reader. And you're like, well, maybe they're not going to extend them because they're, you know, it's just the interior is not as important to them.
No, Brockers at the so same time.
At what, right? Yeah, they invested draft capital in the
but
position.
They extended him too.
Well, they had to extend him because they were in salary cap hell that
sure.
time, and they had to. They had no choice. They didn't have any other guys they could extend that they didn't already. But the question now becomes: is the lack of attention because they don't care much about the position, or is the lack of attention because they knew they already had someone solid? You know what I mean? Like that's what I'm not sure of. Right. And that will be the $1 million question for if they want to sign Aleem, if they think Aleem is the reason why they could go light in investments, or in money, then yeah, you extend them. And if you think if you just think the position is not as valuable, then, you know, you don't extend them. But I find it hard to believe a guy who basically made his case for being, you know, one of the better GM candidates was his ability to identify Aaron Donald, is all of a sudden just going, and a former defensive tackle himself is right. just going to former, right. is just going to not think the position is valuable.
Right.
I'm leaning towards it getting done. The issue that I have is I've been looking at the defensive tackle pricing, and it's a lot higher than what I was expecting it to be.
Yeah, it's 20 plus million a year.
Right. And so that's a hard pill for me to swallow. At the same time, as I talked about with Morgan on the last podcast, having a player who can get interior pressure just makes everyone else better. And you have that potential to have Aleem be that guy this year. And if he can be, everyone else is going to look better. Aiden's going to look better. The cornerbacks are going to look better. And there's a real domino effect to if Aleem can show out. If he does, he absolutely gets paid. If he plays the way he's been playing, it'd be interesting to see what their philosophical approach to the position and him are.
I mean, look at he's not Chris Jones, but look at the difference Chris Jones made to the Kansas City Chiefs last year, right? And not just a matter, and I'm not trying to asterisk the Lions win or anything like that, but
just
look at how he played in the Super. I mean, no one wants to say it, but Chris Jones was the Super Bowl MVP this year.
Yeah, it's a totally different defense, and they had to shift to their defense in order to get that Super Bowl win. So, yeah, I could feel that.
That's it. I didn't. I wasn't trying to do my Mike Tirico impression there. I'm sorry.
You just threw the asterisks out there and then walked away, like it was just hanging there. They got options. They've got Aleem that you have to consider. You have Decker you have to consider. You know, we haven't even talked about the fact that Iffy and Derek Barnes are probably both. There are also two other starters in contract years. So they've got some space. They've got some time. See what happens. Like,
yeah,
you want a roster that is that you draft and develop and pay. That's if you could have a roster full of those guys, you're probably in a good spot. So this is the this is it sure looks like the makings of keeping this foundation together and keeping this team together and that chemistry and having those players that you draft and then reward. It's good. Not it's beyond just good, like, you know, karma. It shows other free agents. And when it comes time, yeah. And when it comes time to like need a guy or, you know, it sure opens the door for that. So I don't know. I still have a couple minor concerns about the roster overall, but I'm happy with the extensions that are happening because I think it gives stability. And this is the next one, the next box checked. And I'm hoping for a little bit of a break to recharge so I quit stumbling over myself. but yeah, I'm hoping for a break, but also looking forward to the next extension as well.
Hey, buddy, your scheduled podcast is just around the corner. Right after that, you and me are going to be hitting up OTAs.
Man, I'm telling you, it's I know everybody loves these podcasts. I'm trying to get them out. you weren't even the one that I was supposed to do next. I was supposed to get Miko done over the weekend, and then I didn't get it. Joe's been on vacation if anybody's been wondering why I haven't done a regular DOB show. Joe's been on vacation. He's back, and I'm trying to get him back on the schedule. The schedule is coming out, so we're gonna have to do a podcast. I'm gonna do a podcast with schedule as well. Like, there'll be more coming. I'm just trying to
not
to make
so
them...
easy to do four podcasts a week, huh?
Not with three kids, it's not. Oh man, end of the school year is fun. No, it's not. So anyway, I hope we continue to make progress with all of our podcasts, and we'll see how that goes. And hopefully we'll have some news. Every time I think we're taking like two steps forward, one step back type of thing. But
I'd
in the interim,
one step forward, two step back.
No, I think we're actually making progress. It's just which direction we're headed in is hard to say. I'm off track at this point. So, for those of you who have, you know, stuck around through my muttering here at the end, I appreciate everyone tuning in to listen. We will have more shows coming up, including the schedule. We're going to have probably get a Q&A done again. And I know Miko wants to come back on, so I want to get Miko back on the schedule as well. So hopefully we'll have more podcasting entertainment for the Lions fan base. Jeremy, thank you for joining me. I know you have been on your media tour, which is congratulations for that. Radio, streaming, you're all over the place right now. So thanks for making the time for this little podcast. And
thanks for being my surrogate podcast.
And we'll get some more. We got more stuff coming. Don't you worry. All right. Until next time, let's go Lions.